I want to show you an example of, it's to me the greatest example in the Bible of when the King James people translated the Bible, of what they did. Go to, it's chapter 2, verse 8. He's talking about how he got him great works and houses and vineyards and orchards and everything, maidservants, menservants. And in verse 8 it says, I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I gat me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. Where it says musical instruments, it's a word that either means mistresses or demonesses.
Close. Got
it. This is my end, I'm sure. Is this one where they missed it by a whole point?
No,
second
no.
Just they couldn't bring themselves to write it down.
But the great, in the Hebrew, I mean, it's given in 1 Kings that he had, what, 900 concubines, which... Huh? Right.
What does that mean?
Huh?
What
would
be the point of
having so many?
I guess you would understand that.
I can understand that.
Ronnie's
a spice of life.
At least
one. Look at the expression on Daryl's.
You can only do one at a time.
No.
That's not true. Maybe.
No.
Well, you have a lot of iron.
Okay. Anyway. Especially those demon mistresses. You
know, but this case, there's a great story, or a bunch of great stories in the Talmud about the word, because it's a strange word. But how the hell they translated as musical instruments is beyond me. But there's all these, Rabbi so-and-so says that he had all these mistresses for this reason and that, you know, et cetera. But the real meaning of the word is demonesses, female demons. But it's that even the spiritual realm was under his control, and that too was vanity. Now, you know, we've talked to the United, you know, before that in Western culture, where there's no belief system in animism, where there's no spiritual belief, you know, you don't, except in charismatic circles, you don't really see demons. Well, I challenge any of you to go to Mindanao or go to New Guinea or even you're a fool if you don't believe in a spiritual world that exists. And him, the thesis of it is this has not, it doesn't have the impact to our minds here because, well, but to come to the understanding that that he had under his control, even the demons.
Wow.
And he said, and that too was vanity. That's what the message of this.
Way as far as the sorceries you could get.
Well, it wasn't sorcery, it's just whack. He just spoke and they obeyed. So, I mean, it's you know, most of you still secretly believe that if you had just a, you know, forget it, you don't secretly believe it, you blatantly believe it, that if you could just get this little bit more control over your life or the life of others, then you would be happy. Well, what the lesson of this is that he had the control of, he was the, I mean, how far does his empire go? From one story says it went from Ethiopia through Egypt all the way to India. That's where he exercised influence and control. And the kings of the rest of the world submitted themselves to him. and that and he had everything that your heart could desire, and he still called it vanity. Now, there's no way to penetrate your system with that, because you lay there in the mischief of your own minds and decide and scheme all these little scenarios that define, if this would happen to me, then I would be at a state that's desirable. No. It's all vanity. No. You've got to begin to see that. You've got to not excuse. The lesson of the book of Ecclesiastes is that you no longer have the excuse to excuse your projections of self and then worship that. Chapter 3. This is the most difficult statement in terms of the practical aspects of it that you will ever confront. This will challenge all of these little belief systems. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven.
Does that mean an appointed time?
Nothing that can happen.
Well, I never would have thought that
until
the last couple of years.
To everything, there is a season. Take the worst thing that you can conceive of in your life. Take the worst thing that you can conceive of in history. To everything, there is a season. And a time for every purpose under heaven. I mean, that is, they sing songs about it, but nobody hears it. We read it. Everybody knows this little thing. It's like, but think of the implications of that. To everything, there is a season, a time, a purpose that...
The season, like even the word season, I don't know, I hate summers here, and every summer I go through, oh, this is terrible, and then all of a sudden it's fall, and I think, how did I get here? It's not summer anymore, and fall passes, and it's winter, wow, it's winter, and it's spring, and it's just like, go, it's here, and then it's gone.
Okay, a time to be born, a time to die. The rabbis believed at the time of Christ that when a child was born, in order for the child to come forth out of the mother's womb, the mother had to die. And then it was the Holy Spirit that brought her back to life in an instant. But there had to be death of the woman. And this was in the mind. I mean, this was the mindset of that time.
Is that why she was unclean for so long?
Yeah. So the idea, when it talks about rebirth and all of these things in terms of the spiritual, when he talked to Nicodemus, he was talking to that mindset. It said that you must be reborn. That means that everything that's about you must die, so that my little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. You understand? That's a pretty biggie.
Wow.
A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. And you're speaking of seasons. There's only two seasons in the Hebrew world. There's only seed time and harvest. The Hebrew Christ's revelation of, or thoughts about They didn't think of spring, summer, winter, and fall. They thought of seed time or harvest. Those are the only two. And that's why when Christ said the night cometh when no man can work, he was speaking of the season. You understand?
Between seed and harvest.
Yeah. A time to kill, a time to heal. Now, who would ever believe there's a time to kill? You'll believe there's a time. You can always believe that in history. That you'll have some favorite cause that you've adopted. And so, well, they got him. I mean, and you do it every time you root for a stupid team. I'm serious. When you root for a team, all it is the genetic memory of warfare. And that's why you get so much pleasure out of one team winning or losing. It's the same genetic memory of you've wiped them out, you've killed them, you've murdered them, you've discounted them. And if you've really discounted them good, if you've really murdered them intensely, then you get the greatest pleasure. Understand? Now, Christ elevated that to a dimension that you cannot even imagine. And he said, if you hate your brother, you're a murderer. That's pretty heavy. I mean, you might as well take an Uzi and... If you hate anybody, especially your brother, but if you hate, you might as well, from God's standpoint, go down here to some gun store, buy an Uzi, and go shoot him. It's the same effect. A time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away, and a time to gather, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. Now, if there are appointed times for every purpose under heaven, first of all, I have to be appointed by somebody. There has to be a schedule that somebody has divined or designed. And the schedule has a rhythm, a harmony, a function, or a purpose. Do you realize that for 99.9999999% of your life, you have been fighting the appointed time?
Yeah.
Do you know that there's only two reasons that you age? One is anxiety and the other is the ultraviolet rays from the sun. Genetically, there's no reason that you should age past maturity. You age because of anxiety, and the spiritual meaning of anxiety is you're at odds with the flow. Psychologists today talk a lot about being in the flow and pop psychology. Some of you who have written or have done music or in art, there are moments when you're in the flow, when it just, when you lose consciousness of self. That's what's called being in the flow. Every time you're not in that position, you are in opposition to the appointed schedule, appointed season, the appointed rhythm, the appointed time. God demands that the normal Christian life is the flow. Anything other than that is the life of the Antichrist. All your struggles and all your vain attempts to get it right are the exact opposite of the appointed season. You understand? To everything there is a season and a time appointed to everything under heaven. And it's not under your control. None of it. Christ said, grow an inch. You want to control your life? Let's test your control. Grow an inch. Well, we can go much simpler. You know, you want control of your life? Then release the right enzymes to digest the food that you've eaten. Release the right acids at the right time to digest it. If you can't control the smallest things in your life, aren't you kind of a fool for trying to control the bigger things? I mean, do you understand that the propensity of you to define control is the sin? Doesn't matter what the fuck you do after that. Once you've taken control, you've left the appointed time, the appointed season, and you've entered into the domain. It doesn't matter what you do after you've left that. There's no such thing as good or evil. There's no such thing as right or wrong, success or failure. When you have left the appointed season and gone into that domain, you're already hopelessly lost. You will continue, and you're in here. You're into this place that there is no guide. There is no way. There is only a morass of confusion, and it takes every bit of effort that you have in your system to keep yourself in control, to try to keep it, do you know what I mean? You try to keep it together at all cost. Well, you can't get together in there. You'll always assign, you'll know that you've got it, you'll know you're in the wrong place. When you're in that position of trying to get it together, oh, if I just had this education, if I just went to another few more, if I just had this credential, if I just had this money, if I just had this, if I just had that, you know you're in the wrong ball game. You are out of the flow. At all cost, your only job is to say, Father, forgive me, and remove back to the position of peace and grace. It doesn't matter if you're trying to do God stuff. If you're in that position where you're trying to get it together, trying to get it right, trying to keep it's that frantic feeling that you're confronted with when the stimuli of your life leaves, and you, oh my God, I'm faced with my own aloneness. I can't get by anymore with having the radio playing or the television blaring or even coming to Bible study. It's my own aloneness I'm faced with. And you sit and wonder and try to get your aloneness right. How do you get it right? There's 10,000. Well, I'll go get laid. That'll get it right for a minute. I'll go get drunk. That'll get it right for a minute. I'll go to church. That'll get it right. I'll listen to a ball game. That'll get it right. I'll listen to some idiotic program on the radio. That'll get it right. I'll play some music. That'll get it right. I'll read a book. That'll get it right. I'll masturbate. That'll get it right. What? Aren't you tired of that feeling of franticness? Aren't you tired of that bullshit? That's why God sent his son. But that, the definition of his son is love and joy and peace and long-suffering and goodness and meekness and mercy, etc., etc., against which there is no law. Well, for some of you, you've been coming here a long time, and you keep, it's like the horizon, there's this invisible horizon. It's a force field. You remember in these modern science movies that there's always some kind of force field. I can't get by it. I can't get over it. I can't get through it. Well, all you've done since you've been here is try to apply this stuff in a state of frenzy. Okay, but there's this force field there that you can't get it right. You can't get it right. That's why Jesus said to follow him costs you your life. It costs you to say every time there is the slightest propensity to put your eyes on yourself for any reason, that's the sin. You understand me? You got to understand by now. That's when you say, Father, forgive me. Not after you've gone back in and you know, you're back into the swamp again. There's no life in the swamp. And when you're... The only thing you've done thus far is you've gotten closer and closer and closer and closer to this invisible barrier that you can't get across. You can't quite get it right. Well, the reason you can't get it right is because you have to die.
Oh. Oh, is that it?
Neither of that.
That's what the cross means. Abandon yourself. Pick up your cross. That's not your mother-in-law. That's your death penalty. Mother-in-laws would be easy. That cross isn't even me. Some of you think that cross is you have to put up with me, that you have to somehow, oh my God, I'm afraid of Oli. Well, if you didn't have any life, there would be nothing for you to be afraid of. If you had nothing to lose because you had died on the cross with thee, he who is crucified for you, you're automatically on the other side of the picture. Then no one in the universe, not Oli, not the flesh, not God, not the devil, no one can put a trip on you. But the lesson of Ecclesiastes is to everything, there's a purpose. Now, all those things that you've been doing have served a purpose. All those attempts to try to get it right, I know you're all just like I am. I mean, I knew I was being hustled when I was a little kid. You remember that? You remember that time? Those times? Wait a minute here, something's wrong. But then you finally bought into it. And the moment you bought into it, you've lived in a state of frenzy and an activity to try to get ever since. Okay, you've done it long enough. You don't have to do it anymore. A time to love and a time to hate. That couldn't be in the Bible. What profit, verse 9, what profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? Good question. Have you ever thought, I know you have, because most of you are just sort of average Joes. No matter how much you hate it, you're really average or less than average. And you could have been a contender. I could have been somebody if, or I'm going to be somebody if. Or, Perrault, he's just lucky.
You thought that too, huh?
If only. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? Nothing. There's no justice. There is no righteous reward for your nice, sweet little efforts. You might as well cheat. Do you understand?
Very well.
At least if you get caught cheating, you'll get thrown out of school and you'll go through the process earlier. Otherwise, it'll take you the next 20 years to go through this bullshit. What profit hath he that worketh and that wherein he laboreth? None. The sooner you learn that, the sooner you'll be able to be of value to God. Oh, but Lee's going to get it right now. She's going to quit her job and go back to school, and she'll be happy. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. Now, to be exercised means to be humbled. That's a Hebrew word meaning humbled. But it's not just kind of humbled. The Hebrew word for humbled is you've put your head in the mouth of the lion. That's humble. You got it? Humble isn't some ridiculous piety that's taught by the precepts of men by some idiot preacher. Humility from the spiritual, from God's standpoint, is putting your head in the mouth of the lion. All right. See, the thing is, I have seen the travail. Now, see, you think you're gonna get around it. I have seen the travail which God has given us. Well, yeah, but I got this plan. I have seen the travail which God hath given, but, yeah, but I've got this plan that I'm not going to have to experience that. You got it? Now, there's not one of you that don't have a plan. And the function of the plan at the gut level is to escape travail. I have seen the travail. You can't read that scripture with any knowledge, unless you're just reading it like a history or something, unless you can say, I have seen the travail, that it is inescapable. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Now that's it. I mean, there's got to be a mistake there. That means Rex is beautiful?
Yeah. In his time.
Huh?
In his time.
Ah. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. You've got the desire to find out everything. That's from God. He set the world in your heart. But no man can find it out. Remember, it's like the thing we studied last night, or the last time we met. It's the lunar cycle chasing the solar cycle and the moon. And it's 6666 chasing 7. You can't quite get there. You can't quite find it out. I know that there is no good in them but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. Now look at what it calls all his labor. What's the next sentence? The next clause. It is the gift of God. Are you okay, Ed?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you could take that and read it, well, if I labor real hard, then I'll get a bigger gift. Yeah. You see that those words are mutually exclusive? I know that whatsoever God doeth, now here's a biggie. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, that which is to be has already been, and God requireth that which is past. Whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. That statement defines the cross. And it must at some point come to define your life. And that simply the simple statement is it's finished. And anything that you take, that takes place in you, that and any thought process, any activity that takes away from that finishedness is a lie. You got, whatsoever God does, it shall be forever. That means nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. I mean, what does that do to evangelism? What does that do to your little plans? And then the biggie, that which hath been is now, and that which is to be has already been, and God requireth that which is past.
The last phrase, God requireth that which is past.
That's diakrinos, or it's in the Greek, the Septuagint, so it would mean it's he judges that which is past.
It's already
yeah.
That's something if this is what that means, something that's been in my head for a long time. You talk about it. If you're going to try and do the law, you got to go to Jerusalem, build the temple, and do all sacrificial stuff. But even more than that, if you're going to try and do the law, it's already too late. Because I've already got 44 years of natural life wherein I have lied, cheated, stolen, worshipped, and it's too late.
You don't need to worry about the 44, just one day. Anybody have anything else? I don't feel like talking anymore.
Okay.
Take a big guy.
I don't want to talk anymore. Take a big guy.
Seems so funny.
I don't care. It is funny.
I don't want to talk anymore. Get the fuck out of here, Harry.
I'm going to leave in the part where I'm saying all these things. Say it's funny.
Take a big guy.